And as always, 8:15 Friday morning means the Asri Report. And for this morning's Asri Report, we say good morning to Angelo Fick. Good morning, Angelo.
Good morning and salam to all of your listeners.
And thank you for joining us. Angelo, we right here in Durban, so the ANC's 107th year of existence, which of course culminates in their anniversary, quite visible to us at the start of an election year. What challenges does the party face? And of course, the man who has assumed control and role as the number one in the party just over a year ago, what are a rundown of those challenges, Angelo?
So for the party itself, I think the major challenge will be unity. They've come out of a fractious internal election in 2017. They spent much of 2018 trying to signal unity, and there were many, many divisions between them, secret meetings between the former president of the party and country and various senior officials of the party implicated in state capture allegations. You know, those sorts of issues are going to have to be dealt with internally in the party so that they can have an election campaign in which the party speaks with one voice. Of course, this is happening in the province in which there have been several political assassinations over the last couple of years. And that's something that is of great concern because it often involved access to power, the party lists, and that again has surfaced, the party list question has surfaced again. The conflict between what branches want and what the NEC may deem to be the absolute minimum requirements to represent the ANC in a positive way in the elections, that's going to be crucial. Because while there are internal issues about appealing to supporters and members of the party, in an election year, the party has to appeal to the broader public and the voting public particularly in a way that does get people to come out and support it at the elections. The man himself, Cyril Ramaphosa, faces particular challenges, and some of those have to do with his perception inside the party, that he has to be seen inside the party as being somebody who is a unifier, somebody who is impartial, and somebody who does not play faction politics, which is something that his predecessor, Jacob Zuma, has often been accused of. And then he faces the same challenge of being seen outside the party as being fair, being anti-corruption, and also being the man who's going to bring the country and the party that leads that country back from what many see as the 10 difficult years from the end of Thabo Mbeki to the beginning of Cyril Ramaphosa in January 2018.
You know, Angelo, unity certainly is going to be a top-notch discussion within the ANC. Those that are the top brass as well as the foot soldiers on the ground. What needs to be done to create this impression, at the very least, before the national election, that the ANC is a united party? At the same time, you know, the balancing act of appeasing all and sundry. You know, this is, you know, is it manageable? And what is the recipe for unity for the ANC?
Well, there is a difference between real unity and the appearance of unity. And I think, you know, most political parties around the world go for the appearance rather than the reality. And here we see the appearance of unity being signaled by the ANC. So we have Cyril Ramaphosa saying in the same week, one, that his presidency aims to overcome the challenges of his predecessors, and at the same time saying his predecessor is a valuable asset to the party, and so appearing on platforms with Jacob Zuma and signalling that he is a valuable asset to the ANC and its election campaign. That, I think, is being seen as the signal of unity. The same will be done with other officials who may in 2017 have opposed Cyril Ramaphosa's campaign to be president of the party, but will in 2019 support him as the candidate for the party to attain power. Now, many people think that it is in the interest of some of those people that Cyril Ramaphosa performs more or less well than his predecessor. But the problem with this is that the lower the percentage that the ANC returns to power with, the lower the number of people will be who can rely on the patronage networks that the access to resources of being the governing power gives the ANC. So there is a crucial question here that people in the party need to balance out their interests as individuals with their need, perhaps, to either get their particular person in, or whether they sort of slide up to somebody else in the Ramaphosa stable in order to retain their particular, how shall I put this, benefit from being close to power.
In order to canvass support, the ANC will always have the ability in South Africa for the foreseeable future to call back on their role in the, you know, in the struggle, the apartheid years and the sacrifice given by many within the party. But in the recent few years, the ANC being plagued with corruption. Now, attending a business conference hosted by Mr. Ramaphosa a while back, he did bring it up. Is it wise for him, so close to the election, to continue to bring up issues of the last few years of corruption, or should he be looking to look less into that nefarious past and moving ahead? What's your thoughts on that, Angelo?
Well, I think it's unavoidable that he has to keep talking about corruption because he has to signal that he and his leadership in the African National Congress are anti-corruption. This is because there is a State Commission of Inquiry into state capture that is ongoing. The commission is headed by Deputy Chief Justice Raymond Zondo. And that particular commission's work is being done in the public gaze. And increasingly, as I've indicated last year, senior ANC officials, who are then also officials in government, have been implicated. So we've seen Fikile Mbalula, for example, saying that he has absolutely no fear to appear before the State Capture Commission. Various other figures are now implicated in investigations done by IPID into, or IPID, into what has been done inside the party and its use of state resources, allegedly, to fight its own internal battle. So, for example, various figures, senior figures in the police, meeting with a private security equipment provider to get listening devices ahead of the NASREC conference in 2017, and that public money may have been used for that. Also, there are arguments that public, or there are allegations, public money was used, up to 45 or 50 million rand. Public money was used to order to bribe people to vote in particular ways. So there is internal state material or state capture issues that Mr. Ramaphosa has to indicate his party is fully behind the investigation and utterly intolerant of state of corruption. Whether or not this will bear itself out in substance in an election year is what is the balancing act. So he has to keep the ANC as being anti-corruption at the top of people's minds, hence his endless return to that topic. But I think increasingly his opponents, opposition parties and critics of the ANC will argue that they want to see substance of this inside the ANC. In other words, they want to see those people who are implicated in and accused of corruption sidelined from powerful positions in the party. And we saw this when we had a sort of uproar about two figures in the Gauteng ANC, one of them implicated in the Life Esidimeni sort of tragedy, being people asking why the ANC is keeping them. And that's why the NEC wants to vet those lists, because what they have to be seen to be acting tough on corruption, because it is uppermost in people's minds, partly because of that Raymond Zondo Commission.
All this, of course, the 107th anniversary culminates tomorrow, Saturday, at the Moses Mabhida Stadium in Durban. Now, much of the fanfare that goes with, you know, those rallies, and certainly this one, with the manifesto and various other addresses by the leadership of the ANC, can be expected, you know, being an anniversary and, of course, being an election year. But how will this really affect the perception of the ANC in KZN and in the broader South African public?
So part of that is spectacle and part of it is public relations. So in this rally, the question will be, will the stadium be filled? Chances are it will be. And how people react to various components of the speech. So we know that in KwaZulu-Natal, there are internal divisions that have ended up in the court, in the party. And so the question will be whether those internal divisions that have sort of driven the party over the last half decade can be put aside in order to signal unity to the larger Republic of South Africa. But then people listening to the, you know, January 8th statement will see it as the beginning of an election manifesto process where the party is signaling what it thinks the electorate finds important this year. And that identification will be based on research, but it will also be based on a variety of, shall we say, indications from the public about what they find useful. This, of course, comes a month before or a few weeks before the State of the Nation address, so it will be important for South Africans to measure what Cyril Ramaphosa says is the ANC's manifesto statement on its assessment of itself on in its 107th year of existence, what the aims he makes of itself, and what he will then say as the President of the Republic of South Africa is the state of the nation. And if there is a gap between those two things, I think people will begin to question whether Cyril Ramaphosa has one set of statements for the ANC supporters and one set of statements for the Republic of South Africa's citizens. And so it is a very important statement for South Africans to listen to, because it tells us how coherent Cyril Ramaphosa's version of the ANC stands in relation to his version of the Republic of South Africa.
Moving a little bit away from the discussion on the ANC, education fairly high on people's concerns this part of the year, and of course we recall Minister Mocheka's announcement of the matric pass 78%. But what are we to make of the of these examinations, as well as the minister's announcement of the school leaving examination results last week, and the response to that this week, as we enter into the 25th year since the abolishment of apartheid, have we made a progress when it comes to education in our country? Do the numbers tally up? Angelo, your thoughts?
Well, here I think many critics, including Equal Education and Azri's own Jamie Lee Dormill, have spoken about how the Department of Basic Education constantly relies on numbers to define its success. So it talks about how it has more matriculants passing, how it has more people in school, and how it has higher pass rates. But these numbers obscure a very, very tragic picture on the quality of the education that is delivered. 25 years since the abolition of apartheid, we still have a variety of shortcomings inside schools across the country. We have had between 60 and 78% of 10-year-olds are unable to read in any particular language at all. And so these kinds of, you know, shortcomings in the education system have to be addressed as a matter of urgency, because we're moving closer and closer to a crisis point where a majority young country, most of the people in this country under 35, are going to have to deal with a generation of people who have been miseducated, undereducated, badly educated in post-apartheid South Africa. So while the matric pass rates are, you know, useful and important for individual schools, and the top matriculants, and that's a major and significant achievement for those individual, you know, pupils, what we have to look at is the 50% of people who start school but don't finish it, that 78% of 10-year-olds who can't read, the teachers who are under-equipped, under-qualified, schools that are badly resourced in terms of infrastructure. These are all issues that have to be dealt with crucially, because 10 years from now, people who are currently in school will be exiting school, and they cannot do so in the same ways that people currently exit school. Some of them passing, but half of them never finishing. In addition to which, there is a concern around the delivery of teachers, that the teacher training is an issue. And so Angie Motsheha's numbers are useful, and they're useful for those involved at the matric level, but it doesn't address the 50% of students who start school and don't finish it, and those who get through school but actually aren't really equipped to deal with the challenges that contemporary South Africa and the contemporary world and the future will present them.
Angelo, before we conclude, briefly your comments. A rail accident has once again, affected South Africa, gripped South Africa's attention, this time in the state's capital, or the country's capital, out there in Shwane, and fatalities and injuries, the order of the day. Has this brought some attention, and will this be enough to spur people to give adequate attention to South Africa's, infrastructure, the transport infrastructure in particular, just this on the back of a record debt toll on our roads during the festive and holiday season? Your comments on that, Angelo?
So we know that the majority of South Africans in the working classes and the poor rely on public transport every day. So commuter rail services are a crucial component of that in our cities. We know that in our cities, that rail commuter service has been, dismantled, if there is no other way to say it, so that the majority of people can't rely on such transport. And so this is unacceptable. 620 people injured, 3 people dead. In many other places, heads will roll in government for such an accident. The fact that people can't account yet for how that happened, that there was a kind of collision between these trains, that's unacceptable. That this happens in the capital of the country is even worse. You can see the union buildings from many of those stations. and that millions of South Africans who rely on rail services now not only find them unreliable, and this is not the first such accident, but actually find them highly, highly dangerous. We've had fires on trains in Cape Town. We've had accidents on rail stations involving signalling in Johannesburg. We have unreliable services. It is time for the Minister of Transport, the MECs for transport across all provinces in this country, and all of those figures involved across all three tiers of government to sit down and deal with this crisis, because it's unacceptable. And as you indicate, the death toll on the roads for the holidays is an indication of how poorly South African roads are maintained, but also the poorly managed system of issuing driver's licenses and testing people. So these kinds of deaths on our roads in terms of travel, taxi industry that isn't really properly regulated, these are all issues that I think it is unfair for poor to have to rely on poor services when they have a perfectly appointed and elected government that is meant to deal with this and ensure that their lives are as valuable as everybody else's.
Angelo Fake, thank you so much for joining us. On behalf of us three, have yourself a good day and a good weekend ahead.
Shukran and salam.
Brother Angelo Fick joining us on behalf of Asri for that Asri report, our feature here on Friday. Missed it for a while, it being the holiday December season, etc. But I trust we will be up and ready, up and going with those brief yet informative weekly reports, giving us an analysis of events that took place, political and social and otherwise, of course, sometimes that affects our lives here as South Africans.